Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, this week we'll be talking about conditions for the blind in Malaysia.
One of the joys of hosting this program is that we get to meet people from all over the world and learn about similarities and differences in how things are done. This week, we'll be speaking with Moses Chu, Executive Director of the National Council for the Blind of Malaysia. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, if you like to listen to this show as a podcast, due to circumstances beyond our control, we had to change the subscription URL for our podcast feed.
Now, on our website, if you go to the podcast and archives link, we have complete instructions for subscribing properly so you can continue to receive shows. But basically, you'll have to use the new subscription URL if you haven't been using it already. And this is www.eyesonsuccess.net/EOS_podcast. Also, for people who have subscribed to the podcast using iTunes or an iOS device, you will have to delete your podcast and resubscribe in order to continue receiving the newer episodes.
And in order to do that, you just search for Eyes on Success with hosts Peter and Nancy Torpey. Let's start by meeting Moses Chu and learning a bit about Malaysia, the country, before we get into our focus topic where we talk about what services and conditions for the blind are like there.
Hi, everybody. My name is Moses Chu. I'm about 58 years old now. I was first working on the corporate side, and I was working for a company called Coopers and Lybrand. But about 12 years ago, I decided to come and work for the blind. And I am now, as of 2014, the executive director of the National Council for the Blind Malaysia. And I am visually impaired, or in fact, I'm actually blind, with only about 1/60 on my right eye, and my left eye is beyond any measuring. The doctors say I have accommodated, you know, myself quite well. And I'm able to move around with a white cane.
Moses said his eyesight in his right eye measures 1/60. In the system we use in the U.S., that corresponds to 20/1200.
So before we talk about your organizations, I was wondering if you have been blind since birth or what the cause of your vision problems are.
I was born blind. Interestingly, perhaps I would like to just tell everyone in the Western world, especially in the Chinese family, having a blind child can mean a lot of bad omen, you know. I was born a Liang family, but was then given away to another family, a Chu family. So that's why I have taken on the name Chu. This happens a lot 50 over years back.
I take it that's not so common these days. People are more accepting of these disabilities?
Yes, things have changed a lot. And I think there are less adoption. Actually, to be very frank, within the Chinese community, they do say adoption, but actually they purchase the person from one family to another.
You said they purchased the child?
Well, a lot of money exchange hands. And in my case, I'm sure there was some money exchange hands. The family who sold me off, the Leong family, would have got some money, and the Chu would have paid some money just to take over a son, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, son is something on high demand.
Yes.
He talked a lot about being Chinese in Malaysia. Well, about 60% of the population of Malaysia is either Malay or indigenous. And another 10% are ethnic Indian, and 25% are ethnic Chinese, like Moses. So he's Malaysian, but ethnic Chinese. For the benefit of anybody listening who might not know, can you just say a few words about where Malaysia is and some of its special characteristics?
Sure. Malaysia, we are proud in a way that we call ourselves a colonial country. The British were here, and that's a reason why we speak reasonably good English, but that is losing. The new generation would be speaking more on Malay rather than English. Malaysia is between Singapore and Thailand. Malaysia is about 58 years old, 1 year younger than me, actually. We have now 28 million people.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is services and conditions for blind people in Malaysia.
So we wanted to talk mostly about your agency and then about what conditions are like for the blind. Can you tell us a little about the agency of which you're the executive director?
Sure. I work for the National Council for the Blind. It's not a very old organization. We were established in 1986. And the National Council for the Blind is an organization formed by five other organizations. The Malaysian Association for the Blind, that's the biggest among the lots. The St. Nicholas Home, which was the first organization serving the blind in Malaysia. And I'm proud of this school because this is where I went. Then we have another three more organizations, which is the Society of the Blind, which is the biggest organization in Malaysia that is formed by blind people. Another organization is the Sabah Society for the Blind and Sarawak Society for the Blind. Now, Sabah and Sarawak is actually about 1,000 over kilometers away from the peninsula of Malaya.
And Sabah and Sarawak are the two provinces in East Malaysia on the north coast of Borneo.
Why did you form the National Council for the Blind out of these organizations?
We had many organizations. The blind people felt that they were losing control. In every organization, it was sighted people doing something for the blind. Therefore, in the 1964, inspired by the World Blind Union, the blind people of Malaysia formed this Society of the Blind. And after about 20 years, the blind people still felt that they did not have much of a say in services. So the blind people got together and convinced a few other organizations, and these were the organizations, the five, to form a new organization called the National Council for the Blind, whereby every organization has two seats. So with five organizations, we now have 10 people that form the council. And that's how the National Council for the Blind started. Now with this, we hope there will be more blind people coming in to make decisions.
Well, that sounds like a great idea to have blind people have more of a say in what happens to them. Now, I was kind of curious, what is the major mission of these combined organizations?
Good question. It is our hope that through the National Council for the Blind, services and benefits would be given equally to everyone in material where they reside. You see, in Malaysia no doubt is a very small country, but most of the developed services are mainly in a place like Kuala Lumpur.
In the cities?
Yeah, in the cities, but mainly in Kuala Lumpur and the island of Penang. So we hope that with the National Council for the Blind pouring in money, we hope that blind people, no matter where they stay, where they reside, will enjoy equal opportunity to services, employment, and even benefits.
And what specific services are we talking about here?
Training, the use of ICT. That we have found that is the only way that would allow blind people to go forward.
ICT?
Computers.
Ah, okay.
That has enabled many of us to move forward. For example, if they are all able to use Skype like me, then we can know that we are very far apart in Malaysia. We can all keep in close communications. And that we have achieved quite well. I think there are about 300 to 400 blind people within Malaysia are using Skype, you know, to keep in touch, to just talk about anything, update one another. Skype has been used to help to teach one another on the use of computers. So it helps a lot.
Now, one of the organizations you mentioned was a school for the blind that you attended as a child. This is from preschool or kindergarten through the end of high school?
It has changed a lot since it started. When it started in 1926, the St. Nicholas Home was really a home for children that were abandoned. And in the 50s, they started formal education. From the 50s to the 90s, they were actually a school. The government of Malaysia took over the education of the blind in the 1990s. So the school was handed over to the government and it became a home for senior citizens. And it also took on to be a training and rehabilitation center, whereby those newly blind people would be sent to this school to learn how to accept the fact that they are now blind and to do things the blind way. And they also carry out formal training of ICT. They train blind people how to use the Microsoft suites. They teach them in all kinds of other skills.
If they're not using the old school for the blind for blind youth, does that mean that the blind youth are being mainstreamed into the regular education system?
That is the next step. What happened was when the government took over the blind schools, they actually set up schools for the blind. But with ICEVI now concentrating on inclusion, the Malaysian government seems to be looking at an inclusion approach. I'm not too sure in the US what do the blind people feel, but some of us who are blind feel that inclusion is a bit too difficult to implement. And it's a real waste of money. We find that having blind people educated separately, but allowing them to mix with other children may be a better way.
Right. Well, I can imagine there's trade-offs. And as you say, I could imagine it would also be more expensive to mainstream children in school.
Definitely, because when you want to mainstream blind children in school, you have to ensure that every mainstream school is ready to accept the blind. And I feel that in no way can you equip all these schools, in no way can you educate the teachers to be ready to accept the blind. There will be some teachers who cannot accept that fact.
Now, what happens after a child graduates from high school in Malaysia? What are the opportunities for going on to college and or getting employment?
Most organizations working for the blind, at least the five organizations that are affiliated with the National Council for the Blind, have a department called placement. And some of them have a department called training. So for those who finish school after 11 years, they will move on to these training centers to be trained in different skills and to be prepared for the job market. For those who can continue the study, they will move on to university and perhaps learn some skills on their own. And let's now talk about those who have finished 11 years of schooling. They will most likely get onto things like clerical job. So they will be taught how to use computers. They will be taught how to maybe self-grooming, also daily living skills to take care of themselves. And we do have quite a number of blind people who have been participating in the mainstream employment. Some of the common jobs are like telephonists. Telephonists is a dying trade. They have now all moved on to telemarketeers and telesales. Some blind have managed to do, like me, I was in administration, so I do all kinds of things in an office. I was an admin manager before I came to join the National Council for the Blind. We have a few blind people who have qualified in law and they are working within companies, looking at legal matters. We have a few blind who have gone into clerical, not much though, all right? The biggest group of blind people have found employment as masseurs in Malaysia.
That's a very tactile skill.
That's right. But yet, you still find people who are from, you know, associations of massage, not accepting the blind people into their organization.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes even once a blind person is trained for a job, there may be some resistance on the part of employers and coworkers.
Oh, definitely. You know, the traditional and complementary Chinese massage in Malaysia, the association still has not accepted blind people as their members because they say that we cannot do everything that a sighted person can do. Though there are about 3,000 blind people in Malaysia being massaged. And I think we outnumber the sighted.
So now in the U.S., the government plays a large role in setting regulations, setting rules for anti-discrimination, and also for giving out resources to visually impaired folks to help them gain employment and education. What's the role of the government in doing some of those things in Malaysia?
We as Malaysians, when we look at your 508, we are very envious of it. We want to do something like that in Malaysia. We have started the Malaysian Disability Act. It was passed in 2002, but the act does not place any penalty on those people who violate the act or those people who do not comply with the act.
So you have a law with no teeth, essentially.
That's right. We are pressuring the government to improve the act, but things are moving very slowly. No doubt there's so much talk about the CRPD. Many countries have not signed and many countries have not ratified it.
And the CRPD is what?
The Convention of the Rights of the Disabled.
Okay.
So many countries say they are looking at it, but very few countries have done anything about it. You know, the mentality of our politicians, the disabled is not so much in their thoughts. Number one, the number of disabled is so small that they think that without the disabled, they will still be in power. And number two, the politicians don't get a good chance to understand the disabled. And, you know, it's only on the very surface they say they want to do something for the disabled. But when you get something implemented, most likely it would be implemented in the wrong way.
It is difficult for a small minority of people to have a big impact on the political system sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. We need more politicians who, in Malaysia, everything is led by the politicians. We need more politicians who understand us and who will join our plight. You know, recently, I tell you a scenario that makes you, as a disabled person, you get very annoyed with these people. We are talking about getting better employment for the disabled. So the National Wage Consultative Council came up with what they thought was a bright idea. They say that since the disabled find difficult to get employment, why not the disabled take a cut of 30% of the minimum wage? And that got all the disabled people wild because all of us who are working in mainstream, we do the same job and we expect to be paid the same, you know.
Just to clarify, when you say take a cut of the minimum wage, you're not saying to tax everybody to contribute to facilities for the disabled. You mean that the disabled don't have to get paid as much as everybody else.
That's right. So that there will be more employers willing to employ the disabled because it is cheaper to employ the disabled. So all the disabled got very wild and we sort of voiced out our concern. And it was only just a few days ago that we were in a meeting and we told them straight in the face that, look, we are not going to agree to such a policy. You know, definitely we feel it's discrimination. And in today's thought of politics and today's environment, you cannot be doing such things. So they have now, they have heard from the disabled, and we are happy that they will not recommend that to the government.
So it sounds like the government doesn't have very effective tools for protecting visually impaired and disabled people. How about in terms of other resources? I think about in this country, we have things like the National Library Service, where the government has audiobooks and braille books recorded and printed and distributes that freely to people. Many of the social service government organizations will give people braille displays and screen readers if they need them for education. Are there services like that available from the government in Malaysia, or where do people get these things otherwise?
To be fair to the government, I must say that in the area of education of the disabled, they are trying to do something, but they have not been very effective because, you know, the people that they employ do not have motivation, do not have the drive to help the disabled. No doubt they take care of education, but it is the NGOs in Malaysia that are more effective in carrying out work. In the area of assisting the disabled in equipment, under the welfare scheme, there are some, but welfare being welfare, it is only very, very basic. They are more concerned with a roof over your head and food, enough sufficient food for you to eat or to keep you healthy. And that's about all. But in the area of education, they have looked at the syllabus of the blind. But even the introduction of Braille, our own Malay Braille in Malaysia, was done by NGOs in collaboration with the government. A very good example is we called a national a Braille Council of Malaysia so that we can formulate Braille in Malay and we can keep up the standards. And after speaking to the National Council of the Disabled and all the departments related with disability, they have decided to say, why not you do it? We will support you. Instead of they coming up with a budget and driving the Braille Council of Malaysia. So it ended up being part of it, my baby, because I'm the National Council for the Blind. We were the ones lobbying for the Braille Council. And the government said, told us, now you do it, we will support you. This is the NGOs that are leading the way. And that is in 2014, my friend.
Yeah, well, I guess some of it is a matter of resources and priorities. It sounds like Malaysia is going through a big transition process in this regard.
I think if we look at a lot of Asian countries, it is all this way. Even in Singapore, in the Philippines, Indonesia, it is the NGOs that are driving the services rather than the government. That's why when we hear American government, you know, you get onto a job and your Braille display, yeah, you will be provided with the necessary equipment and all. Malaysia, nothing of that happens.
So did you have to buy your own equipment at work?
Yes. All of us have to either buy our own equipment or you wait for donation.
The employers generally won't provide those?
No, not under the government. There are some very big employers that do. They modify switchboards so that blind people can work side by side with sighted people. And just to show you how much the NGOs are doing, recently I have managed to get Standard Chartered International to support a Braille equipment loan program. It was just launched 2 weeks ago, whereby Standard Chartered, they have this international seeing is believing resources that helps to prevent blindness. They have started this fund that would pay for equipment for blind people who get onto a job. And they are trying Malaysia as the first country. And if Malaysia is successful, then they might move into Indonesia, Vietnam, and Thailand. So it's again another private concern coming to help the blind rather than the government. But the government, as for the blind who need computers to replace what their eyes cannot do, they have not seen it as an important area to look at. Something just to mention that we are not too far away with all this modern equipment. Whatever is available in America, and because of the internet, we do bring it into Malaysia, Braille displays, you know. We do bring it in, and we are very happy that equipment is getting cheaper. The competition has made equipment cheaper, and we are not very far behind. The only thing is, not everybody in Malaysia gets access to such equipment, only a handful of privileged people. And as I work for an organization serving the blind, I have that advantage as well.
So what do you see as the prospects for the future? Do you think there will be some change in the government, or do you see the transitions happening?
The transition, the day will come, but it would be not something close at hand. Maybe another 10 years, things will improve. It's improving a little bit.
Now for this week's final item, how you can get more information about the National Council for the Blind of Malaysia and any of the other topics we've discussed in today's show. So if anybody wanted to learn more about your organization, can you give the web address?
Sure, it is www.ncbm.org.my. NCBM is Norway, China, Bombay, Malaysia.
Can people contact you via email?
I would love replying anyone who write to me. They can write to me as Moses, spelled as M-O-S-E-S. Chuo is one word, at ncbm.org.my. And if they like to look for me over Skype, Moses Chu is my Skype name as well. If they like, I'll be very willing to discuss, you know, and talk and learn from others as well.
So you might want to contact Moses. He's a very interesting person to talk to, and I only wish we had time to present the entire interview we had with him on this show. And as usual, we'll have all that contact information in our show notes associated with this show at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1433. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about using VoiceOver on the Mac. Both new and experienced people using VoiceOver on Mac computers will find something of interest in Janet Ingber's new book entitled Learn to Use the Mac with VoiceOver, a Step-by-Step Guide for Blind Users, available in many formats through the National Braille Press. We'll speak with her about the book, many features of VoiceOver, and her other career as a blind music therapist. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboo.fm at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.